This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Hello, boys and ghouls. This is Martin. And yes, it's Halloween-y. Nick and I have taken the week off, so I've got this panel that I recorded at HeroesCon 2017 a few months back, and I've just kind of been holding it, waiting for the right time to release it, and what better time than now. We'll be back next week. Be sure to check us out on Twitter at Geekvine, at Nick Wetmore, and at Nerd Legion, and enjoy the panel.
I'm Joe Rauch, and I'm the moderator of this panel. This is sort of part two of a day of horror panels. I'm here at HeroesCon at the 11 o'clock hour. We had a panel with the artists, and now we're going to have a session with some of the writers. So here today, I've got Paul Jenkins and Donna Cates. Evan Dorgan will be here at some point, maybe. We'll look for our time. But the whole time, will be guys
Hi, my name is Johnny. I write a bunch of panel books, some of which I suppose are quite scary. I write a book called Redneck and Skybound, and I just have a new book that just came out called Baby Teeth. It's about the Antichrist, which is sweet. I don't know if it's that scary. But yeah, that's it, really. I'm terrible at doing
it. I'm good.
This is Paul.
I'm Paul. How are you doing? I wrote Hellblazer for 6 years, actually. I don't just work in comic, I actually work in film, animation, and television, so we do a lot of horror stuff in that. So, that's me. There you go. Let's talk about horror.
And you wrote The Sentry.
I did write The Sentry, but it wasn't really horror.
No, it was fucking awesome.
It was cool, thank you. We apologize in advance, but we're actually counting the swear words, okay? So just so you know, we're on a budget. So I apologize to the young one up front, but you know, you showed up to a horror panel, what can we
have?
Alright, so what got you guys interested in horror? What sort of your first formative experiences with it? Were you kids kind of taking the comics off the rack, horror movies? What got you interested in the genre?
One of the things with me is, so growing up in Great Britain, we're not worried about horror. As it's really interesting society in the United States because horror's really big, really extreme stuff's really big. But then there's a somewhat like puritanical sort of approach to it, which is really strange to me, because you really, really love it. But I think the reason that Americans really love it so much is because there's a puritanical kind of background. So in Britain, like, horror's on the rack for kids, So it's like, we had, like, all these, like, crazy war comics. We had, like, weekly comics. When Jaws, I guess, originally showed up, we had a character called Hookjaw, and it was like a shot with a hook in his jaw, which is even better, right? So every issue was just people getting chopped up and eviscerated. It's great.
Well, you guys didn't have a comics code either.
No, I didn't have a comics code. And so for me, one thing that was kind of formative for me... All right, let's go. Sorry, I'm absolutely late.
This is 208, it's on the third floor. I got lost.
Sorry. We'll let you introduce yourself. Cool.
I'm Evan Dorgan. Hi.
There you go. But Carlos, for sure, basically, we used to have all the reprints of the EC comics, which I don't know if you've ever seen, but this is from the 50s. And so these things are like science fiction, fantasy, horror, crazy stuff, and that been reprinted when I was a little boy, so I used to pick up that stuff all the time. I don't think that my grandmother, who was the one who brought us comics, had any idea what she was speaking to, but we said all this crazy stuff, and so I was like really the norm over there, getting really cool EC reprints.
Yeah, I think probably the same. I grew up with the first... you wouldn't really call it a horror book now, but when I was a kid, the old black and white Conan magazines were just brutal. They were like really, really, really hardcore, and my grandma used to take them away from me all the time, so I had to have them more. I'm kind of boring when it comes to that. Like, I grew up reading Stephen King, love all of Stephen King stuff, and then Freddy and Jason. I'm not wild about horror stories that don't have a hero. I tend to love horror where, like, you know, it's scary, but someone's going to beat the crap out of Freddy at the end of the film, and he's going to get defeated. I'm not really into the torture porn stuff. Yeah, so same way, we bore, like, comics that I found in the woods and stuff, you know, and all that stuff, and then into the films and stuff.
I missed the question.
But yeah,
inspirations, how did you get into horror? What is the horror? What sort of horror stuff?
I'm a full, I'm sorry, I'm losing my train of thought here. I was a geek for everything growing up. I mean, just everything. I was a comedy geek, horror, everything, game shows. I mean, I was raised by television. And New York television had everything. I mean, if you could watch all of them, you got all my comics. I liked everything. I didn't write horror comics until I was a few years, but it's something that I always wanted to do. The EC connection I had as well. A friend of mine, I was sick. I can remember these two books that he gave me. I was 10 years old and I was sick, so he gave me comics. I was a Marvel geek, so I never read any of these, but one was a DC book that had my in it, so I ended up doing that, my comic, a few years ago, based on this. And the other was an EC, the Nostalgia Press, who gave me prints of scripts. And it was one story from each artist in there. And this book, absolutely wrong for me. I was terrified from it. I always talk about how horror comics really aren't scary, but at a certain age, when you're reading Peanuts and Tintin and Marvel Happy Comics, you know, and Superman Smiling, and then you read Shoe Button Eyes, which is a happy story about a dead kid, and it's just awful. Of course, yes, then you want more. But I was never a horror comics fan as a kid. I would be by Son of Satan. I liked superheroes only. But I did like horror movies, monster movies. And I liked, as I got older, I really got into Lovecraft stuff, cult stuff. Came back around to EC for those box sets when I worked in a comic store. The first thing I bought when I worked in this convention was you went on the first day of retirement. Fantastic. Russ Cochran, 5 book set. I worked a year, $2 credit. Prior to that, for a mile and a half, I still have it. And that was just, I just love that. I mean, I love comics, so to have horror comics was just awesome because they were funny, but they were creepy. So to have people playing a baseball game with body parts and laughing at that kind of is my two, that's my two things, horror and comedy. And feeling sick over something that you saw that's just wrong.
Yeah.
So you hope you can get that reaction out of people, too. In Beast of Burden, what we mostly have been doing is making people sad, which wasn't the intent. but horror and comedy are interesting because you're trying to actually do something successful that if you know you're going to fail 50% of your audience, probably. They're not going to laugh or they're not going to care. Superheroes, you know, I'm not saying it's easy, it's hard actually to do superhero stuff because it does so much. But if you're trying to get a joke or you're trying to make someone feel uneasy or deal with their fears, you will fail 100% if you don't do your job. And they will go, I'm not scared or I'm not laughing. And they're linked to me that way. So that's why I like horror comedies also. Sorry.
So what do you all see as the keys to writing effective horror? What works, what doesn't? I know you all sort of approach it maybe in a little bit different way.
We're going to stop you. You know, it's weird. I don't actually, I wouldn't label myself as a writer of horror. When Redneck came out, which is about vampires, so I suppose I see what, you know, going on. You know, we like to hang a little kid and set him on fire and he'll burst his shoe. So I get it, right? But I've never sat down and thought, oh, I'm going to make a horror comic. It's always just been about the characters and what they're going through and, you know, making them scared of things rather than trying to make the audience scared. If that makes any sense. If you can make someone fall in love with a character and want to follow them and then put them in some really awful situations where you are scared for them, that's a kind of a different feeling than, because in comics, we can't really do much of like the jump scares kind of thing. You know, it's tough. I mean, certainly there's ways to do it, but don't know. I say I'm not a writer of horror, but like my new book's about the Antichrist. But really, it's about just like this 16-year-old girl who's trying to raise her baby, and just it's like the most like loving and sweet book that I've ever done. It has more in common with like Strange in Paradise or like Paper Girls or like something that's kind of softer and quieter. But then, yeah, I mean, occasionally like there's some wild Satan type shit that goes down, you know. But I feel like if you don't build that that base of your characters, of people caring about your, you know, again, it goes back to what I was talking about with I like a hero in a horror story, because when it's just a bunch of random nameless people who go into a house and just start getting chopped up, okay, I don't care. I don't if they're all going to die and the bad guy is not going to get away, right, you know what I mean, where he is, then why would he? To me, I don't know.
So what makes a good hero for horror?
Someone who learns kung fu in their dreams and fights kung fu in their dreams is my first example that I get to go to. No, I think Bruce Campbell is like a great answer to that question. Yeah.
You have to have a hero.
If you need someone on your side, Ash is the
answer. Actually, Peter Cushing might be my second
choice. Yeah. Too.
I love Peter Cushing.
But he is good as a villain. That's right. He's
nuts. Yeah.
You mean, and this is just me speaking for the types of things I enjoy. I take no pleasure from a character who has zero agency. He's just a victim the entire time. Certainly there's, like, you want to do that at certain points, but you have to earn it. Like, if there's a point in Baby Teeth where the main character, Sadie, who's 16, if I've written a scene in which she is completely helpless and can't do anything about it, I want that, like, we're gonna build up to that for a long time. Because I want you as the reader to feel as hopeless as she does, and then that's not gonna happen unless you get to know her. You know, like, what types of responses that she'll have to these things. So I don't really know if I'm answering your question, really. But certainly chainsaw hands are fucking cool, too. Yeah.
Paul, any thoughts on either hero or what you see as keys to...
I mean, I think what Donnie said is it's the same rule for horror to some extent than it is for any story, right? You don't care about the people in the fight. You don't care about the fight, right? So, mm-hmm. So what are we doing? We're writing stories about people, and it's usually, if you read it or watch it, it's a mirror held up to you. It's your reflected in the story, right? It's all about emotions and all that.
Yeah.
Those are universal to any kind of story. And recently I spoke on a panel and so I gave a speech at this thing called Future XLI, which is about the future of storytelling in VR and AR, which we did in the studio a little bit. And the answer to what's the future of storytelling is the same as it's always
been. Yeah.
That's kind of how we tell stories, right? What is it about horror that works? Well, first rule is going to be people, right? If you populated your story with people, and that's exactly what you mean by the hero. Like, if I don't care about anybody in this film because they're canon fodder, then why am I going to sit there and watch it? I'm not going to stick with it for more than 5 minutes. But that's our primary job, is to make sure they show people. The theory on horror, I think, what Aaron said a little bit, is actually, frankly, they're really tied to humor in many similar ways, because they're extremes. I think you have to juxtapose this horrific stuff against something that gives you a break, because it makes the horrific stuff even more effective. So you need a bit of humor, you need a bit of respite, that kind of stuff. And then finally, I mean, for me, I think it sort of depends on what your definition of horror is, so that's a whole new, different question. But to some extent, I mean, I wrote years ago The Origin of Wolverine, and I remember getting to a point where I wrote a scene where this little dog, and I love animals, I've got loads of them, they're all rescued, and I had to write that someone took the dog and cut its throat, and I didn't want to write it. I felt awful writing it. I felt like really drained after I finished it, and pretty sullen for a couple of days. So I thought to myself, actually, I learned something from that, which is that was horrible. That took me out of my comfort zone, and I had to write it. So it wasn't even tied to humor. I think the definition, to some extent, of horror is taking people away from what they're comfortable with and letting them explore that a little bit.
And that's part of it. I think the horror also, I mean, you talk about different styles of kind of interpreting the idea of horror, right? When you really look back at the history of comics and really kind of most art
Most art is responding to whatever people are afraid of at the time, right? In the 30s and the 40s, you get things like Captain America and all these things because people were fucking terrified of the war, right? And then, you know, you start to get into the 60s and everyone's terrified of the nuclear bomb. And then all of a sudden, everyone is getting their powers from, you know, like giant nuclear bombs. And then, and so I think, and then you go into the 80s and you see reactions to things that people were terrified of.
Like drugs. So when we said crack is terrible,
You don't get the Dark Knight Returns without Reagan.
Oh, vampires also came back. Well, during the 80s,
that's not an accident. Yeah, so I think that everything is, at a certain point, I think that you guys would both agree that, when I'm writing something, it's staying in my head for a reason. Like it is, you know, I think as writers we all have a lot of ideas, but the ones that stick around for a reason. And for me, it's always unanswered things. It's things I need to think about. It's things I need to a road I need to go down.
And it's usually the worst roads.
Yeah,
it's always the worst roads. Death,
man. Yeah.
Well, God Matrix is a book that I wrote. We're all doomed.
Yeah.
We're not going to get out of this.
God Came is a book I wrote after I had a really profound health experience where I kind of almost died. I had an organ failure. I turned 30 and I just like almost instantly died. And so I'm okay now, so it's fine, right? But it was terrifying, right? And so I came out of that wanting to talk about death and everything, you know. And so I don't think, you know, I'm sure we've all had the experience as writers of you write something and then a few years go by and you go, oh shit, that's what I was about.
Holy shit.
And you wish you knew at the time.
Yeah, totally. Less therapy.
Honestly, that's why I don't read my stuff for like 2 years after.
Yeah.
I don't even look at it. I don't even think about it. And about 2 years go by. Then, so if a new issue comes out, I don't touch it.
No, either.
2 years go by, and then I look at it, and I go, well, now I know what was happening.
Right.
Everything's autobiographical.
Yeah,
and
absolutely. Stuff. I mean, Baby Teeth is a book. I'm sorry.
No, please, no.
I was just saying,
Joe's seen me steamroll people.
I'm very happy to hear that. I feel like I'm getting like overly personal, like over and over again, but I don't mean to.
I'm about to.
In a minute. Okay,
sorry,
right,
worry about it.
So, like, you know, Baby Teeth is you know, while it's about the Antichrist, it's one of those things where I didn't even realize it until the book came out that there was like some like reviewers or something brought up a few points that I didn't know were in there. That I was like, oh wow, yeah, I guess that's there. Because my wife and I, we've been married for 6 years, but we've been together for like 14. And we recently discovered that it's going to be, if we wanted to have kids, it's going to be like really, really, really hard. So that was kind of a bummer and a shock. And then all of a sudden, I just happened to start writing a story about a 16-year-old girl giving birth to a baby and then destroying her world and like writing about baby and mom stuff. Like, shy. Like, you know,
if anyone's going to be superb, it's about animals. So I find it very difficult to write because Beezerburg wasn't supposed to be a series, it was an 8-page story. I wasn't supposed to be writing horror. I write dairy products that hit people and dumb stuff like that. So people are like, well, you're
know, really good at it.
I tried to write a book, I tried a series for Dark Horse many years ago, and the editor said, and I said, can I write one? And they said, it can't be funny. So it took me a long time to start writing the other genre that I really like. And the weird thing that happened was Beast was an 8-page story for Dark Horse, Book of Haunted. And I knew that I love haunted house stories. Scott Alley knew that I loved horror stuff, and he'd always been trying to get me to do something. And I sort of thought, I'm going to do a haunted dollhouse, not knowing the M.R. James story or probably a million other ones. I couldn't make it work. So a haunted doghouse. You know, high concept. You've got 8 pages. So it ends up being kind of worship down exorcist thing. I realize that's where it's heading. And the characters, as we were talking about, I love supporting characters who show up. And in old comics, Marv Wolfman was good at this, Stephen King's good at this, there's a lot of people. If a guy is, in old movies, if the guy's a soda jerk or something, you can sort of remember how interesting he was. He has a thing.
Yeah.
The woman, the cigarette girl, is interesting. He's sexual or is a character. No one is bored. Franklin Pangborn is always at the hotel, and there's a weird bit of business.
I want every page to count, every panel to count, every character to have some sort of, as if they leave the stage, they have a life.
Right.
But, so these characters, I've tried to make all eight of them really interesting, even though you're only going to be with them for 8 pages. And Jill Thompson and I did the story, and people liked it. We ended up doing another one, and we did it for each subject. Okay. The third one, we realized we kind of were developing a world, but the problem was we have these animals, and animals fight dirty. And even though this was a storybook kind of approach to this, there's death and there's depression. Has anybody read it?
Yeah.
Okay, the thing about it is that what happened was we did the story Lost about the book. We did the story Lost, we made the series, and that was mildly funny. Fearful and free-flowing anxiety about what would I feel if anything happened to my daughter.
It ended up becoming, I've never been afraid of anything in my life. Like, I stay up to anything. Nothing really bothers me that much. Then I became a dad, and I would wake up in the middle of the night. This is your horror story.
Yeah.
I'd wake up in the middle of the night, and I would wake my wife up and say, sweetheart, you know the intersection by Publix? Can you be really careful when you drive through there?
Oh my God.
Because I love my kids so much. It was killing me.
I sometimes feel like I was getting in the car and going to Target.
There's horror.
Because I don't want them out of my sight.
Yeah.
But this plays into what happened in Beast of Burden. We have several stories where Jill's cried on the page. And I have one page where there's a teardrop. You can see where it hit the watercolor. And it's funny because Brian Harris-Orell is like, what did you do with it? Because she's all like upset after the meeting we had with Scott, because there's a character that I know years from now what's going to happen to this character, and I broke down crying in my car.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, this is what should happen, but I don't want this to happen.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, have you ever planned a death of someone, and then when it came time?
I don't. Ace was supposed to die in the werewolf story.
Yeah.
And everybody yelled at me, and I could not pull the trigger.
Yeah.
I made it as sad as possible. I wanted people to think that the world was coming.
Yeah.
That the black dog was over him, and that this was it. And I look at the pages, and I'm like, there are times where I read a story and I don't want to. Jill's like, I don't want to. The story Lost is about a mother looking for her 2 children. It ends very badly. There is a kid who is doing what you talked about with your dog. He's collecting trophies. He's a future serial killer. He gets his, but the story doesn't end well. The last page is... it's very hard to write. I thought it was a beautiful scene. I was thinking about Shelley Winter's dead body in the Charles Laughton film that he made with Bob Mitchum, Love and Hate. Night of the Hunter. There's an amazing scene where her body is floating in the water. It's beautiful and it's sad and terrifying. And that was the image we had from the pond where the boy was throwing, was weighing down all the animals and throwing their skulls. And it ends on a weirdly happy note, but it's one that a lot of people stopped reading the book after that.
You know, one thing I wanted to just...
That was my fear.
Yeah.
That was my fear. And real quick, the issue that we just did last year, that's about bad parenting. It's the flip side. It's about my mother. It's about myself. It's about somebody who should not have had kids. Mm-hmm. And the different character is going to have to really work, I think, to get into some people's hearts again, because it was about people being raised wrong and raising other people wrong. It was about people who are living and growing, but a lot of the parenting and that issue got so bad that my wife had to co-write it with me, because I could not. I was dredging up stuff about my own life, about my own.
What I was going to bring up is that I don't know if this is the same for you guys. I'm just about to go ask my question. I don't know how it is for you guys, but when I am writing effective horror, it's because I'm in a good mind frame, so I can deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm stressed out or going through something really hard, I find humor much easier to write. I can do that.
Yeah,
I like doing humor.
Okay.
But I need to be able to kind of take a breath and gird my loins and be able to write the horror. So I can only do it when I'm in a good place. And I don't think my horror is very effective if I'm struggling or stressed out or anything like that. Then I'm like, I don't have the mental energy to do this thing. So you've got to be like in a good place.
I'm writing a book right now that hasn't been announced yet, but it is just far and away the most incredibly dark thing I've ever written. It's brutal. To the point where I always, every issue that I write, I put on a specific song. I try and find like a mostly like symphonic stuff, because I can't write with like words and everything. And
okay,
cool. And I like to always embed it in the script itself, so the artists can kind of share my headspace. I don't know if it's ever worked or they've ever even opened up that.
I can't do that as a kid, but I do soundtrack my stuff. I've got an RR playlist. I've got
happy ending playlist, yes. Sad ending playlist.
And then I've got Laurie Anderson from when I have to stay up all night. keep drawing.
This new book I'm writing though is I struggled so hard to find music to attach to it because this will all make a lot of sense after next month when it's announced what this thing I'm doing is. But the character that I'm writing is such a dark character that he is in and of himself antithetical to the idea of art or like symphonies or anything. And so I had to find just like I found like old like tuned down like where it's barely audible like Gregorian chants. So it's just like
that stuff drives me crazy.
And it's just that, right? And so I just listened to that all day.
That's like John Cage medieval music.
Dude, and my wife will come home. And she'll know when I'm writing that book that day because she'll come in and she'll be like, "Hey, honey, I'm home." I'm like, "Yes, yes." And she's like, "Oh, you're doing that one? Okay." Like that one has given me legit nightmares. Like I've gone to bed at night and like that character followed me into my dreams, and I was not okay with it.
That's usually the best work, though.
I love it. I've like tapped into there's something quite. It's as visceral of a feeling of writing a scene in which a character wins and like everything comes perfectly, like a plan comes. You know, it's as fun.
I've dreamt of a plan coming together
the other way. Sometimes to go the other way and just outright just like take out all your anger and all things that piss you off and just like take it out on people in this book. The book Redneck I do. If any of you have read it, I wrote this essay kind of thing in the back of issue 2 because issue 2 came out, but I'm writing currently. I just turned in issue 16, so I'm like crazy far ahead, and so I wrote this thing in the back explaining to them. I printed a picture of my cat, and I explained to them that. Hey, just a heads up, my cat just died. And you might not think that's very pertinent, but my cat was sitting in my lap while I wrote the issue that you just read, and she died in between issues 13 and 14. So I want you to keep that in mind for when you read issues 14. If things start to get wildly out of control and really fucking dark, know that those characters are being harmed in part by a small little cat that is no longer here. Like, I just took it all out on this book. It's, I don't know, it can be cathartic to be.
It's really what Paul said about mood, because the issue that we turned, the issue that of Beast of Burden that we turned in, that my wife had to help me with because it was getting too much into my childhood and a lot of things that were upsetting me, it was supposed to be a comedy. The whole issue was supposed to be a comedy. It was plotted years, like several years. We have a lot of lag time between issues when Jim gets done. And it was supposed to be a Lovecraft parody of just old tropes, kind of, I guess, more journalist, because journalist was a parody. I don't think he knew it, but and it somehow went from a comedy about demons and all that blah, blah, blah talk to a, you know, parenting issues, terrible ending comic. And I wonder if it's because my frame shifted so much during it that I could not shift gears.
But
it on the page just got worse.
I think part of it is like, and then part of it is if you think about like what's actually horrifying to any of us as human beings, it's not really seeing Bruce Campbell's smash up even dead people. Yeah. Like, so like it's viscera and crazy blood and that, you know, yeah, now it's kind of funny, right? What's terrifying to us is situations. And so I remember when I wrote Hellblazer, one of my favorite issues that I had written was about a guy who I actually met. He was at Dunkirk, and he walked in and out with a tie trying to keep his rifle dry, and he shot half his hand off. So he spent three days trying to walk in and out with a tie and trying to survive, and he lost blood, and he was so tired walking in these sandbanks that he was about to fall over and go to sleep, and somebody fished him out of the water. But what was horrifying about that story was actually what was going through his head. He had a girl that he loved in Britain, and he thought, I'll survive for her, and I'll see her when I come back. This is in the story now. And when he gets home, he finds that she's gone off with someone else. So the horror wasn't whether or not. And so in the end, he haunts her, and he has all this kind of stuff going on. But the horrific idea that you would be surviving just because of someone that you love, and you're ready to go, and then you get every part of your world collapses. That to me is horror.
Yeah,
right? That's horror.
The horror stuff that we think of.
But the crazy shooting.
The stuff that we like to have on a T-shirt.
Yeah.
Or a model figure of it, but really it's the anxieties.
Yeah.
It's the social stuff, and it's what's eating away at you at the time that you created it. That it's not getting chased by anything.
No. So I wanted to say that the other part of it was that when I was doing Hellblazer, my wife actually, when I met her, she's like, "You're really nice. Why do you write this crazy stuff?" and I said, "I'll read this one." So this one issue of Hellblazer was totally somewhat a joke, and it was about a bulimic gymnast. Because I had read
hilarious.
Yeah. Well, that wasn't the joke. Yeah. But she, I read a Sports Illustrated article about how gymnasts were being abused by their parents and being told, like, "You're fat, stick your stomach, they're tiny." So they would get rid of bulimic, and then they would try to tumble, and their bones would be brittle, and it would break their bones, and some girl had died. And I was really annoyed about that. I wanted to write about it, so I put it in the book. In my book, the bulimic gymnast gets filled with the soul of Bacchus, kills the father, and then eats him because they cannot put back and cannibalize their victims. And then because she doesn't want to be fat, she...
That sounds crazy.
My wife read it, and she's like, horrified. Like, "What? How did you think of this?" And I'm like, "I thought of it. I watch you while you're sleeping." She's like, it's
that's romantic.
But it's God, the horror of that story has nothing to do with the chewing and the back ends and all.
Yeah.
It's everything to do with how awful it is to watch a young girl be mistreated so badly in a public environment.
Yeah.
And that's the horror. So we got to pick it.
Have you ever been, either of you, have you ever been pulled back from an interview, someone says, "Maybe this is a little bit," because I have. I went way too hard on an issue one time. Right?
Yeah, I can remember doing Hellblazer, and I had Crazy Park. This was a true scene. This literally happened to me. So I was on a train from Massachusetts down to New York, and I had a T-shirt on it said, "I like Pope smokes dope." And his picture of John Paul, and he had a joint in his hand, and he was like laughing, but they had airbrushed like the joint on
it. Yeah.
And I ended up sitting across from a couple of nuns, and they were just staring at me, and I was like, "What? Oh, shit." So, and I put it in the book, and my editor said, "No way,
really?"
And changed it to the character having a no coat hanger sign about abortion and that, which I thought was
that's
50
way
times worse.
So much more.
DC's always been a weird company.
That's so weird.
When I was working at Marvel wasn't even paying attention, so I was just putting band names on everything, and now they're like, we get sued for half that stuff. DC's always like, they were so afraid a retailer somewhere in Wisconsin was going to get upset, and they would just go out of their minds. But I don't think I've been lucky or not lucky because I'm usually off on my own. But nobody from Deadline was going to tell me anything. And, you know, I'm either doing kids books where I really know the limits, and, you know, or I'm doing something where I'm just allowed to burn down Trump Tower. Like, "Oh, geez, they've been trying to go, God, do I wish they really did it?" And so I don't have any too many problems with that. Actually, when I was working on Predator stuff, I had. Because they still were jittery. It was very early.
License.
So character, yeah. But it wasn't 20th Century Fox. It was Dark Horse was afraid of language. And I'm pleading with Chris Warner. And he agreed with me. It wasn't Chris. Chris, if you met Chris,
I
wasn't
Chris.
Yeah. And Chris, I'm like, if you see your best friend's head hanging at, you know, it's a jock strap for a Predator, you're not going to say, "Oh, damn."
Yeah.
"Oh, damn. Oh, heck." I'm like, you're going to start, you know.
Yeah.
Fouling up the air,
yeah.
But I can show the head.
hanging.
I can't say. Oh, I can't have a strong reaction to this horrific act of violence. But that was about it. Otherwise, it's just kick, burn babies,
right.
Set them on fire, push them in the cards for a life.
Well, in an issue of Redneck, for those of you who haven't read it, spoiler alert for the first issue.
There's violence.
There's some shit goes down. One of their own, it's not a family of vampires who live in East Texas and they try to live like a peaceful life, but it doesn't go well. One of their own, their youngest, they're the smallest boy, they wake up the next morning after some shit goes down and he's hung from a tree and he's on fire. He's dead. Right? And so I thought that was pretty fucked up. Because it's made me sell a little boil fire, right? The next issue was supposed to be an appropriate response to such a thing, where the boys of the family go into town and just start murdering everyone. Because I really wanted to do it to my thinking was, I wanted to do this thing where, because we follow the Bowman family, which are these vampires, and I wanted the audience to really like them and to kind of be on their side. And then feel with them and feel about them the way you would about a family. But then quickly in issue two, remind the audience that they're fucking monsters. They're like a pack of lions and they're gonna go do some heinous stuff. So they can't go into churches, right? Because it's hallowed ground. So they just filled a truck up with gasoline and just drove it into it and jumped out of it, exploded it, and let everybody burn in the church. And then they found out where this dude was, and he was in a hospital, and they just were walking in the hallways of this ER room, just murdering people with shotguns, just walking down the hall.
I think that's the GOP health plan.
Just going ballistic, and they find this guy, he's in surgery, and they rip all these tubes out of him and shit. It was in,
yes,
and
it was the GOP.
And my editor was like, dude, this is, they were like, your audience, his point was, your audience is not going to root for these two characters anymore. They're not going to like these two characters. And I was like, yeah, totally. That's what I want. I want the audience to be in a weird headspace where they're like, I just liked these characters, but now, oh, fuck. They're monsters.
It's good tension, though. I think it's a problem because people playing, Grand Theft Auto and stuff.
Right.
Everybody is really nervous. They're spending some money. It's usually somebody else's money.
But to their point, it ended up being a good note because it's something that... I ended up taming it down.
You took out a few shotgun blasts?
I took out a lot, because when that eventually does happen, it's a good moment, but we need to earn it more than dropping it in the third issue. We need to earn it more, so I definitely got backed off on that one.
Questions from the audience?
I think that you have to earn a lot in horror.
Mm-hmm.
Like you were saying earlier, if you do not care... I mean, audiences will get off on a Saw and things like that, and I remember going to horror movies in the 80s every week, and everybody else, pumping my fist and cheering whenever somebody got split open or whatever. It was sort of a joke, but the movies that matter,
right?
Are the ones where, even if they're as gross and over the top, but if you really want this person to get through, and they don't always have to live, a lot of horror is about not letting society rebuild and not letting your fears be believed. Or there's always some element of it where you can even win, in Shadow of Innsmouth, where you can win and lose at the same time.
Well, my favorite horror film is the Rob Zombie one, the sequel to The House of a Thousand Corpses. Help me out. The Devil's Rejects is amazing because the band of serial murderer family are the heroes. They're a bunch of outlaws, and you find yourself rooting for them because the cops are after them, and it's a Wild West outlaw thing. And it's this fun game that it plays where as it goes along, you find yourself being they should definitely get caught.
So is it
fucking terrible people?
Is it more like horror? Because the truth is, aren't you horrified when you watch a movie like that and you're like, I kind of like it?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You've seen Near Dark, right?
Yeah, oh God, Near Dark.
That's a nice balance of I'm attracted and repelled by these characters.
100%.
They're the funniest characters. They're a clan. I hate the people that you're dealing with, but they're awful.
Yeah.
Well, this is the whole also thing. It's a crime film. And the crime films are really weird things.
You guys, Tony Sopranos, you're
watching a movie where these people are doing horrible things, but you are spending all that time with them. So if you're watching even the original Scarface, you are rooting for your protagonist, knowing that they're a villain because you're involved with the outcome, and you're spending the hour and a half with this person. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you even want, you're watching something you hate, and if you spend enough time with them, you become
invested.
Protective.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, goes back to what I said. Sorry, I was going to say, it goes back to that thing about being outside your comfort zone, yeah. Right? And you think about The Sopranos, think about that scene where they chase someone down through a forest, and the guy's pissing him on him because he's getting poison ivy.
Yeah.
Right? And so that's somewhat funny, but at the end result is someone getting capped.
Yeah, Goodfellas so, has
well, you, how awful are we to laugh at that? But then you, that's
well,
great.
Well, you did. Constantine is a character that you categorically should not like.
Yeah.
Like, he is not a good dude at all.
But you're attracted to him.
But you love him because you're waiting for the other shoe to drop. And you're waiting to see how he can get away with it. He's the Walter White of the DC world. And, like, I
such a good character.
He's the best character of all time. I love him so much. And I wish the firewall was still up at Vertigo so that they can keep him as a heroin addict and a complete asshole instead of having him run around with Scooby-Doo.
Well, that's what I don't know. Snapper car now has that role.
I didn't mean Constantine is not the character that you put on the SpaghettiOs hands.
Can we get back to the questions?
I'm sorry.
Sorry. No, yeah, go ahead.
I can talk to her about Constantine.
Yeah, what do you
think? Question. Are there any lead types of media that you think are underutilized for horror? Because I think that animation is underutilized for horror storytelling.
But would you say, like, if it lends itself to a medium, then it works, right? And if it doesn't lend itself to a medium very easily, then it probably doesn't work as well, right? So, animation, sure, there's no medium that you couldn't do horror in.
I think video games are really good at it.
Yeah, games are good at it. In fact, I've had a lot of experience working on games, and some of the stuff that we tried to do in, like, The Darkness, right? That was a great horror game. We did two of them. And in a movie, you say, don't go in there. Video game, you have to go in.
You get to go in there.
It's a different feeling.
Yeah, that's great.
So
yeah,
there's loads of things that you can do in games. I don't think there's actually an answer to that, because why is it that animation hasn't unlocked horror? Well, I think it's
business.
Self-evident.
Yeah, it's a business. I don't think it's not the medium, it's the business.
Yeah.
Look at how hard it is to make the goon into it.
Well, Japan, which embraces animation differently than the American audiences have, they are
a
decent amount of horror. Excuse me?
Seeing with the goon?
Oh no, I was just saying that the goon. It's been so hard for them to get that.
It's hard for them to make.
It's like a hard. It's a rated R.
It's hard for them to make an R rated comedy.
Yeah,
animation film.
And animation
is still seen as a child's medium,
right.
Kids medium. That's why you still have songs in most of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard to launch that stuff, which is why some of the weird animation's being done for cable and whatnot.
Yeah.
Animation is a really safety net. I mean, I've done some animation writing for television, and it's a weird safety net. Producers get super, super nervous about anything. Animation is a perfect medium for horror. People aren't backing it. You'll see horror animation on the web, and it'll probably become just like comics. Comics are cheaper to make, so that people can afford to take chances. With animation, it's an incredibly expensive endeavor with a lot of fingers and a lot of different people's wallets in it, and that's why you're not seeing musical comedies that are not about princesses. You're not seeing much adventure R-rated. That's starting to break down a little bit for some foreign films that are coming in, something like The Goon, but it's going to be years before there are regular R-rated movies of any kind in animation. It's just not, it's the business.
It's weird. They get gun shy about it.
Yeah. Nobody will put money into it.
Yeah.
Questions.
Do you think that from our current situation, do you think horror is going to rise back up again? Because I know, like,
oh, there was fucking terrifying right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think that's when there's a spike in horror.
Totally.
It seems like there's
The '80s, yeah, breaking,
yeah,
way crazy.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, I think horror's never going away. Also, yeah. I mean, there's so much material out right
now. Yes, you know, I'm sort of talk about future projects and doing too much because then you kind of just give a game away. But I got to be honest with you, like, I'm working on a project right now that we're about to do. It's all about two tribes tearing shit out of each other. Why? Because you see it every day.
I'm doing a book that's a 100% response.
It's going to come in.
Things that are
what's cool about,
designed to be like that.
What's cool about the production of comics is that they're all made so far out, so that like this summer you'll start to see the reactionary books to the some shit that went down last year. You can always kind of time it out. It's always about 6 months where those comics start to.
I think it's trying not to make it dated so that,
yeah,
15 years from now people are going
to totally
go, wow, well, you know, funny haircuts.
Sure, but you say that, but like Dark Knight Returns just straight up had Reagan in it.
Well, like, we could have an argument about that at the bar, so I, you know.
I made a mistake of writing the word MySpace in one of my comments
1,000 years
ago. No one has forgotten about it. You're right about MySpace. I realize it's not relevant now.
Yeah. It is nice though, digital lettering. You can sometimes go back in there,
yeah,
and get rid of that stuff. I did a comic for MySpace. I think that was a few.
That was
one
of the dark horses.
Yeah. I'm at a lot of lost causes. Questions besides comics.
Right here.
Well, I'm trying to figure out how to evoke particular reactions from a reader, and so I've come to a point where I'm trying to distinguish between what. How do I put this? There are different kinds of fear that you can invoke in an audience. Like, there's like an ambiguous kind of fear, like a kind of don't go in the basement kind of thing, where you don't know what's going to happen, versus like Michael Myers is right around the corner. And so, like, one is like the reader can fear a very specific outcome, or just feel kind of creeped out by a situation.
Visceral, or
showing
or inferring.
Do you know like when it would be good to use those particular situations?
Depends on the screen. Yeah, it depends on, really, I think it's what we were talking about. Is that you found the base of the characters or the people that it's happening to. You know, if you, like, how do I explain this? Like, it's a very different reaction where if you have... I'm trying to think of the right way to say it. Okay, if you have a scene where Lois Lane is terrified of something, and then you have a scene where Superman is terrified of something, but you don't see what they're terrified of, just based on who those two people are, those are two very different things that they're scared of, right? Lois, it could be anything, right? To scare the shit out of Superman, you're dealing with a whole other thing. So that's probably a bad example, but does anybody know what I'm saying? It starts with... The same thing that every story starts with, which is just character. And then how that character reacts is how your audience will react. Does that make sense?
One specific thing I could add is that I find Jill actually doesn't like to... She likes horror movies. She does not like to paint gore, especially when it's animals. Okay? And the funny thing is she paints the most beautiful gore. When she actually does... I like to actually nudge her out of her comfort zone. I don't do it as... I'm not playing games or doing anything with my collaborator, with my co-creator, but I'm like, here's the thing. A door is opening up in Beast of Burden. There's four dead dogs walking, trying to get in. It's a kind of Return of the Living Dead joke beat, and it's also a shock beat. The thing is, you've got to see the dead dogs. You don't want to infer the zombies. Zombies are never something that you generally infer. They're at you, they're gross. How much makeup you do, whatever. The guts are out there. When there's a dead boy's collection of trinkets he's taken from the animals he's killed, and they're ripping his throat out, I felt, here's a moment where I can go cheap, and we can show the animals, you know, if Lucio Fulci would have the, you know, you'd have everything, you could, and people would go right on, you don't see a thing. I want your mind to take this weird scene, I want you to see the violence, and then look at the trophy closet, because there's a lot of details in there that on a second reading you probably get. There's a thing that we call in the book, Val Luton moment, where you don't show the guy in the monster suit, because the monster suit's never going to be as scary. Even if it's a beautiful monster suit like the Alien, suit, they don't show that alien as much as you think they do in that movie.
Yeah.
Is it the cheat where you don't show the monster at all, like Blood Beach or something where they couldn't make it or shouldn't have made it? And then there's the, what is Superman looking at? What is going on here? Let the person's mind figure out what the unnameable is, because he will always be creepier than the drawing. You can draw as many tentacles and eyes as much as you can, you can have dead babies, everything that freaks you out, but it will not stay with you.
Yeah, and The Walking Dead, just really quick, because you touched on it, like this, if you read the book or you watch the show, like, you know that the scariest parts of that show are never the zombies. It's never the zombies. It's because it's
the enemy.
It's like The Walking Dead, like the title of the show or the comic book, it's not referring to the zombies, it's referring to the people, right? It's that they are the Walking Dead, because they're all going to fucking die, and you're going to fall in love with all of them. And then, you know, a book like The Road by Carmen, is horrifying. Absolutely horrifying. And the two characters are a father and a son who they're never named. You don't know anything about them, but you're just following through the thing. You know from the first paragraph of the opening page that they are not walking to anywhere. Like, there's no salvation. Like, there's no light at the end of this tunnel. And the whole book is just them crawling along trying to stay alive. But it's because you care about them. It's not about how scary the apocalypse is. It's how fucking terrifying it is to have a young son and trying to keep him alive during whatever that is, be it zombies or whatever.
And maybe one other thing that might help you a little bit is, I think a little bit is in timing, right?
Yeah.
So a good example of that would be in the Ring, the American version of The Ring. They actually did something that was halfway decent at the beginning of it, at least. They have a good scene where someone, like, you know, as an audience, you're going to a horror film, right?
Yeah.
So you kind of know what the deal is. You're going to sit down, you're going to wait for the crazy little girl that you saw in the previews, so you kind of know where you're going. By that point, they've already begun. So one of the first scenes in that movie is somebody going into a fridge, and the way that the camera is angled, there's a hallway beyond the fridge door. So once you've opened the fridge door, the hallway's blocked out, and we're sitting there going, oh no, that crazy little girl's going to be at the end of the hallway when she closes the fridge door. Or in fact, she hesitates at the fridge door for a second, and you're like, there's going to be a head in there.
Yeah, you're playing with the expectations.
You're playing with the expectations, so it's all about timing, and she opens the door, she doesn't even look, and you're like, the moment she looks at the fridge, there's going to be a head.
Oh, horror films do this stuff all the time. In every single horror film, whenever someone goes into a room, they never close the door.
There's a really nice scene in the first Halloween where you've just got somebody doing their laundry, and she moves across the shop, and when she moves back, you can see Michael Myers in the background. And when she puts more laundry in there, he's gone.
Yeah.
That is unexpected.
Terrifying.
Japanese horror movies are really good to watch for a balance of jump scares, shocks. I mean, not right now, it's in a bad place right now, but the aughts and the 80s are pretty good for that, because sometimes you want a jump scare, and I please burn it. God, do I hate it. Phone rings. Or a cat gets thrown onto you. That thing is...
Well, no, hold on. The cat jumping out.
No, the cat... And you can see the cat was thrown by some PA.
Yeah.
The cat is pissed off.
The cat jump scare alien is my favorite thing of all time. Just the fact that they
have Jones is a character. That's different. That's sure. different. I mean, the howling as a dog. Anyway, we can talk about that. The thing is also, you have to say, the closest thing we have to a jump scare in comics is the page turn.
Yeah.
Or the scroll. And you can't really, this is most horror panels that I've listened to or done, you can't really scare people. Not the way that you're going to make people scream and dates are going to read the comic together and huddle up to each other and go, oh my God, I know where he is. You do it on the page turn sometimes, like the, I don't know how to pronounce it, the Avunk or the Avunch. Alan Moore had an issue with Swamp Thing. It's a real thing. It's when they raid, it's in South America. It's fake. It's a cryptid type, you know, urban legend. They raise a child, turn his head back, turn his body around, and this backwards man is running at your character in the subway. It's out of left field, which is exactly how it works. It's one of the few jump scares in comics that I just went, what the? And I've never forgotten it.
Yeah.
EC Comics only had so much room, so their jump scare is like in the last panel. So you do what a lot of people do and scan the page, you're like, oh. No, she chopped. The joke is, the EC comics are very good at that. In fact, the whole joke is the irony of, she badgered me all this time, I stuffed a badger in her mouth. You know, things like that. He was worried about money, I stuffed before money, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
She's henpecked, I'm henpecked, whatever, people stink. But you really can't scare. I think you can unnerve. The only comics that really affect me as scary, Charles Burns sometimes, can really just build up a what the hell is going on?
It just makes you feel unsettled.
There's a lot of people who do really good horror comics, but there's something about the you don't know where it's coming from. Japanese Junji Ito, I love his stuff because one page will be it'll be gore and then it'll be some shadowy thing, and he's texture crazy OCD, and they've made a lot of movies based on this stuff, and they're all terrible pretty much. But I would check out Uzumaki, and I would check out Gaio. It's just nuts. But movies, watch foreign movies because they have cliches that you don't know. This is for me. I don't know. But I love Hong Kong action movies. You start watching Thai action movies or Turkish action movies. I don't know about that. But you will see things you've never seen before because America has its cliches in horror, in comedy. Eventually, you'll get used to them. In Japan, long hair. But the fact that your main character would die a lot. There's a lot of sacrifice in Chinese, Korean, you know, Kung Fu. People will die and that's it. And you're supposed to feel happy even though, good one, but the village is burning. Takashi Miike, things like that. But that's not American cliches. Our cliches, we don't have the samurai code. We don't have the sacrifice. We have the die hard, shoot the whole building up and then walk away with music, which is fun on its own level. But when you watch other horror movies, Mexican, Italian, other years, you start to get a rhythm. Watch Balloon films if you want to. Curse of the Demon is a great one. In fact, there's two versions of Curse of the Demon. It's on a DVD. Well, true, because the British filmmakers put the monster in at the end on one version, and the other, you don't know if the person's crazy or not. You don't know if Dana Andrews, it's based on an M.R. James story, Cast in the Ruins, which is awesome. And you don't know if these characters are being, if it's like voodoo, is it working by psychology? Or is there a monster? You can watch both versions and see which one's more effective. I think it's the one where they infer everything.
Yeah, usually.
Sometimes you don't know, and horror is a lot about not knowing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, David Lynch, and filmmakers like that, you're like, what the hell was that? It'll stay with Robert Blake in Lost Highway will stay with me forever. I don't even like the movie that much, but that is just nuts. And phone calls with yourself, just weird stuff that shouldn't happen. You know, just stuff that's off kilter, that's just wrong. To me, it's more horrifying. Loss of identity, madness, something is wrong.
Yeah,
is cool. There's a movie called Pulse that I would recommend. Kiroshi Kurosawa. That's a movie that changes perceptions every, 5-10 minutes. It's a bit like The Ring because they were going through the fear of technology stuff for a few years. My phone's haunted. My DVD's going to get me, my pop-up, my microwave, my rice cooker. But this one's really crazy because it goes into Lovecraftian. It goes into cosmic horror at the end. And at the end, you're just going, I don't know what the hell I just saw. And there's scenes that are horrifying. And there's scenes, the scariest scene in there, you don't know what the hell it is. It actually made everybody in a jokey room of, beer drinking men and women, go, back that shit up. Back that shit up is usually kung fu. It's usually, back that shit up. I want to see the gorilla get its brains kicked out in the Bloody Apes. But we had to back it up 3 times. It was the first time it freaked us out so much that it was silent. And I have nightmares still over this. It's really well known. Sorry.
We're at the top of the hour. Thank you guys, Paul, Donnie, Evan. Appreciate the time. I think Paul and Donnie, you're over to Aftershock,
please. I'm going to be at the Heroes booth right now.
Like 15 minutes?
Yeah. We have the signing for Heroes Comics.
And Evan, you're over at 1203.
I'm by the webinar that I have a very wimpy small pattern. It's smaller than everybody else.
Well, thank you guys for the time. Really appreciate
it. Thank you.
Thank you.